Bill Schmazo, welcome to the Data Strategy Show, Season 3.
Oh, Samir, it's so good to be talking to you again. It's been a long time since we had a good chat.
It has been, actually, hasn't it? It's been a very long time. Gosh, you know, I see you across the screen. You know, not even across the pond anymore, but it's across the across the screen on LinkedIn. So it's always great and a pleasure to see you in the flesh. And we still haven't met in person, but one day I'm hoping we will.
One day we will. I was hoping Big Data London was going to be it, but yeah. You weren't even there.
I wasn't.
You were down
there.
You were down in Mexico.
Yeah. So it was quite funny, but you know, hey. You got to go where they want you, right?
Yeah. And by the way, I want to congratulate you on the consistency and level of sharing you're doing on LinkedIn.
Thank you.
What I love about that is you're very consistent about putting things out there, and it's always great content. It's always well thought out, but you draw an audience.
Yes.
And and it's that you know, community of people who have sometimes, a lot of times, the same perspective, but sometimes different perspectives.
Yeah,
and I think that make your posts very, very rich.
Well, good. I thank you, Mr. Schmazo, for that. Thank you so much. And likewise, my friend, I think we both resonate on a number of different angles, and hence why you're here as my first guest on season 3. Isn't that cool? So, Bill. Everybody knows you. I don't think I have to do an introduction to you or if you know, let's just get straight into it. New book.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, yep. New book. You've moved tact in terms of where you've headed. You know, you came from the very data science motivated books, you know, the economic value, and suddenly you've gone over to the literacy aspect. So what happened?
You know, Samir, it's an interesting journey. What I found in my career is that I started off as a technologist. You know, I was very much like most people in industry, kind of just, I got quickly enamored with technology and what it could do. And I slowly started moving over towards more of an economist, which is having technology is of no value if you're not using it to create value.
Yep.
And so I've been on a steady march of moving towards economics as value creation. And what's interesting is that going on that march, this term value has perplexed me because it isn't just financial operational value. As an economist, you start to think more broadly about value. Economic value includes, you know, suppliers, it includes employees, it includes community, it includes diversity, it includes a lot of broader things. And so as I've gone into this value conundrum of trying to understand and articulate value, I have found that I become more human, more of a humanist, which is where design thinking has started to work its way in, right? And so if you can't talk about value, if you don't have a good perspective on how do we define how value is created, not just at the corporate level, but at the individual level? And that really led me to write this last book. So the book before this, Economics of Data and Analytics, was written because I was pissed because I was tired of talking to organizations, to senior executives said, "Oh, data, that's IT's problem. Go over there." Yeah. It's like, no. Yeah. Data is not an IT product, byproduct. Data is an economic asset. So I wrote this book on a vengeance, get the message out. We're talking about economics. But as I started talking about that book and speaking to people and running classes, I realized I'm missing a chunk. And chapter 9 in that book kind of touched on it, but I had to explode out and said, wait a second, if we're going to be successful with AI and losing our data to really drive value, then empowering everybody in the organization, making them aware, creating upping the literacy level of the organization is the only way that we're going to ensure that that AI is used in a very distributed kind of way for everybody.
So, yeah, I've tried to understand.
Long answer, huh? Sorry,
yeah,
it has
no,
a really
no,
long
no, no.
answer.
And you know, I think it's it hits the notes, because actually what I've tried to do is to sort of uncover, you know, why Bill has gone on this journey. And that's important for me to understand and for everybody else to understand, because what you touched on was the humanist aspect. And very much so, we are being led into this technological revolution that is AI, this new fad, which, okay, has been around for 50 odd years or so.
Right.
But actually, right, it's been in the hands of the few. Now it's in the hands of the many. And that's the disruptive effect of it. So I understand the getting the people in an organization up to a certain level. But what you're actually doing is much wider. It's not just at an organizational level. And that's where I think the humanist aspect comes into it. So are you looking at this as a way of saying, okay, AI is coming, and it's coming bloody fast, you know, and it's here already.
Yes.
If you miss it, you are going to miss how the impact is going to, what impact it's going to have on you, plus your general society and the world at large. So I think that's where you're heading, right?
So I got a story to tell. So, yeah, you know, about a year or so ago, I moved out of Silicon Valley, where you can't sit in a coffee shop anywhere in Silicon Valley and not have at least 20 conversations around AI going on around you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Even the barista's talking about AI,
oh,
right? Everybody's,
goodness.
It's everywhere, right? The awareness level in Silicon Valley around AI, especially where I was in Palo Alto, was just everybody.
Yeah, you're right,
like,
in the middle of it.
Right. Yeah. So I come to Iowa here. Been here over a little over a year. And Iowa is where both my wife and I grew up. We have family here. It was kind of
fantastic.
The natural next step in our career, our life together.
Sure.
And I was very fortunate to, within the first couple of weeks here, to be invited to a session. I don't remember the exact name of the session, but basically it was bringing together a diverse set of users, mm-hmm, from corporate, education, social, all kinds of different, hundreds plus people were brought together to understand how did central Iowa and kind of the Des Moines area and, mm-hmm, up through Ames and kind of that whole kind of the heart of Iowa, how did we need to think about the future? It wasn't just about AI, about the future. And there were 25 topics we talked about. And so what we broke into groups. I think there were eight groups of about 12 people.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through these 25 and we ranked them on a chart like this. Each one of these things that came up, like clean energy, the aging of the workforce, immigration. There's all these really important issues. And we rated them on
a two by two.
Yeah. This column was, how real is it? Mm-hmm. And this column was, how relevant is it to Iowa?
Right.
Right? So AI was one of those topics.
Ah, interesting.
And of course, it was interesting to my group to watch the conversation.
Yeah.
And in my conversation, there was a conversation, well, you know, there's a few organizations in Iowa that are going to take advantage of, but it's not for everybody. And it's, you know, it's really not there. It's just in movies. And so I explained to my group, I said, well, do you use GPS? And they're all like, yeah, we use GPS. Yeah. Well, you're using AI. It's not, right? Do you find GPS useful? Yeah, GPS is useful. Right. So my group ended up pushing it into, it's here, it's relevant, we need to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
The other seven groups that didn't have me sort of pounding on them all rated it down here.
Wow. Okay.
So here I am coming into this state with this aspirations about what AI can do for people. And the majority of people in this meeting, the leaders in central Iowa, which probably is very representative of the leadership across Iowa and maybe even the leadership across most of the Midwest, except for some of the large cities like Chicago or Minneapolis, right? They didn't get it.
Wow.
This book was written for them.
For them.
It was
okay.
Written because you need to understand this. You, mm-hmm, you cannot afford to sit back and let somebody else at these large corporations or in these three-digit government agencies define what AI is going to be.
Yes.
We need to take control. So that was kind of the moment of aha that really, mm-hmm, drove my realization that I have a mission. By the way, I've got on the license plate of my car, it says AI for Iowa, right? Because I believe that my last mission in life here, I was born here, raised here, went to school here in Iowa, my chance to give back.
Yes.
And so I want to give back. And by the way, it isn't just for Iowa. It's for all these communities who don't think AI is relevant to them, but it is. and they don't know how to get ready for it, and I'm going to help you.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Great mission. Wonderful mission, by the way. With that said, do you think we're going to see a AI divide, or is that already in place? And are we going back to the haves and have-nots?
So that's my fear. Mm. My fear is that the way we're trending right now, unless there is significant effort to reach out and empower everybody, we are going to head for an AI divide. I mean, if you think about AI, has been here for a while. You know, the top organizations have been using AI, as we define AI, for a long time. The Googles, the Amazons, the Apples, the CIA, the NRA,
NSA,
NSA, all those other they've been using AI for a long time. You know, for their own value creation purposes. So it's not, we already have it today, where there's a handful of organizations that have sort of figured it out. Mm-hmm. And we have so many other organizations that are like, well, that's really not relevant for me. You know, I love this one. Well, my data is not big enough.
What?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
You don't need big data to make this stuff work.
The size of three football fields, it's not big enough?
Not big enough, right? Organizations have plenty of data. They just lack the awareness, the approach, and the confidence to start down this path.
But why are we fundamentally still there? But, you know, it's interesting for me to hear you say something like that, that organizations, you know, even the question or the statement, our data isn't big enough. Why are we still there? What has transpired for organizations to be in this predicament?
I think it's, I go back to awareness.
Mm.
And I go back to why my three children in their career all have careers that are in which they leverage AI and advanced analytics.
Mm-hmm.
Awareness, right? They were made aware of it at the house. They're made aware of it from their friends. They're made aware of it in the school. There was this high level of awareness. And so they came to understand that AI is not magic.
Sure.
Right. That it's a tool. It's a hammer, maybe a really shiny hammer. Right. And that to get value from a tool, you have to use it. Right. Having a hammer in your toolbox doesn't do you crap. Right. Using it to build stuff is how you get value. So there's this awareness level that I think we've done as a society horrible job.
Right.
I think our education systems have done a horrible job.
Right.
And it's there in front of us, but we don't make our students aware of it. And so one of the little experiments I ran here, of course, I taught a class at Iowa State. Now, I'm not going to try to compare Iowa State to a Stanford or a Cal Berkeley or et cetera.
Sure.
But these students were sharp.
Mm-hmm.
They were motivated.
Mm-hmm.
They were creative. I gave them my methodology, ran my Thinking Like a Data Scientist class, and the output they came up with was as good, if not better, than any other class I've done this with.
And sorry, so how old were they?
These were second-year MBAs.
Okay, second-year MBAs. Okay, okay.
They were great.
Right.
They were solid. They were as good as any corporation I've gone through. So it isn't a case of smarts. Mm. And I'm actually working with a couple of startup companies here, startups of youth who are starting their own companies. It's not smarts. It isn't that they're not as smart. The awareness is not there, and the programs aren't there to tell them how to do that and give them the confidence to have this. It is, we undersell the capabilities of our people. And as a consequence, we are in threat, getting back to the original question, of having this AI divide, where there's going to be a large number of people who say, well, I can't do anything about AI. I don't know anything. It's done by other people. It's, you know, it's Terminators, right? No, Sally. No, it's not.
Mm-hmm. How do you protect those people in that world?
You got to educate and make them aware. Mm. It's, if they're not made aware of what's going on, this is kind of the, Samir, I think this was a problem with social media.
Yeah.
And we had no training in social media. We had no precautions put in place around social media. And then we saw on the last couple of elections, presidential election here in the US, how social media was so weaponized
mm-hmm.
and how, mm-hmm. lies were propagated through,
yes.
you know, the term alternative facts, which is a way of saying that's a lie.
It's a lie, right? Exactly.
Right. And, you know, Joseph Goebbels would be very proud of how we use propaganda and social media to sway people's viewpoints and to swing how elections have gone. And it's led to a divided country who are people who feel disenfranchised. We never had the proper education on how to be aware of social media. The good news with AI, there's enough red flags going up that people are saying, wait a second, we need to make certain that we are more holistic and careful about AI. So I, you know, the U.S. came out with the AI Bill of Rights.
Yes.
I know that Europe has something kind of equivalent, which is a great, it's a good first step, but it's totally insufficient in making that relevant to the person walking down the street over here, or the barista working at my Caribou Coffee, or right. It's totally irrelevant if we don't take it down to what does it mean to you as a citizen?
And hence your view on a citizen data scientist, right?
Citizens of data science.
Citizens of data science. Sorry.
Yes.
Citizens of data science. Where are the practicalities of that then? How do you start to pioneer that effort? Where do you go? I mean, you're in Iowa. You know, you've landed there. You're back in the, you know,
heartland.
In the heartland. Yeah, I was going to say motherland, but what strides do you take now? You know, to affect the next generation, those people, even the older generation who have no idea. So where do you start? It's quite a big endeavor.
It's incredible. Government doesn't seem interested in trying to inform people. There are very few sort of government initiatives underway. Education's under attack for all kinds of crazy reasons. But I think it's kind of a pincher effect. You have to have a grassroots awareness. You got to get into the schools. And I'm actually working on a blog that by the time our podcast comes out, this blog will be out. But it's basically I took the book and I wrote a short blog, hopefully engaging blog for grade schoolers to help them understand what's going on, just to raise their awareness. And so I think we need to have a push at all the educational levels, grade school, middle school, high school, all across universities, right? It isn't just a data science department. It isn't just a business department. It should be every part. So I think there's that grassroots, but we need leadership at the government level that says we need to make this inclusive to avoid the problem you talked about this AI divide.
Yes.
I don't hear anybody in the government talking about it, at least here in the States. So that concerns me. I don't know. I mean, our politics here, at least in the U.S., is so divisive that, you know, the average citizen gets ignored. And I think that's why we see this huge divide in our country between different factions. And for AI to be successful, it can't be attacked from factions. It has to be attacked as a community.
And at a community level. So I'm just thinking about a thought experiment, actually. How would you educate people? Maybe you had an AI educator.
You could. We've certainly seen with ChatGPT and such that these tools are very useful in doing educational activities.
Yeah.
Within some, you know, you have to teach
within parameters,
you have to teach people
context.
How to use that tool, right? Yeah. The Socratic method for.
Yeah, we're not building we're not building the next generation of prompt engineers here. What you're saying is, I want people to be aware of what's coming, of how it's going to affect them, of what it's going to lead to. You know, and
what they need to do to be prepared to not just survive, but to thrive in that kind of environment. What kind of questions should I be asking? What kind of awareness do I need to have? Do I need to have additional education? What are your expectations of me as a citizen, by the way, which is a really powerful, citizens is a powerful concept. So I do think that we're not talking about turning people into machine learning engineers.
No.
We're talking about making sure they understand what does AI do and how can I collaborate in that process to make sure that AI is working to the benefit of the whole community.
So let's go back to government, because you've talked a lot about what the government isn't doing. What can they do? What would you like them to do?
So I think right off the bat, I'd love to see them come up with a curriculum for, you know, for grade schools or whatever, that basically attacks but makes people aware.
You've used that word quite a few times. Attacks.
Yeah, attack. No, make them aware. I'm too divided. So makes people aware. I think we come up with a common curriculum that's not only used across our schools, but is given to all of the citizens of the United States, for example, or the world, to make sure they understand this thing. We're not talking about, you know, again, a massive amount of money having to be spent. We're talking about creating something that makes people aware, helps them understand what it does, and clearly defines their role as a citizen in making sure that these AI models are delivering meaningful, relevant, responsible, and ethical outcomes.
And in schools, I mean, schools in the UK have a STEM or a STEAM component, you know, science, technology, engineering, arts, and maths. So, you know, my daughter has STEAM. There are some STEM. Isn't that where we would see something like that being delivered as that vehicle?
Yeah.
So it's already there.
I think the mechanism's already there. But we need to make sure that every school has access to this. Mm. It isn't just the, you know, I just don't know how prevalent STEM is or STEAM is across all schools. Schools getting the same opportunity?
A divide there as well?
Is there a divide there? I honestly don't know. It just shows my lack of understanding, which again, why is if we had a government who said, everybody's going to get STEAM training. But I like STEAM better than STEM, by the way, right? Everybody's going to get STEAM training.
Yeah, so
it's going to be, and here's the curriculum for STEAM, right? Which would include AI and data literacy.
Sure.
For all those, right? So again, government could take a much, and I know there's a lot of people in this country who hate government intervention, but government is designed to raise the waters, the tides for everybody. And we want to create citizens across the country who are not only aware, but know how to use these capabilities to create value. I mean, that's how we as a human race survive. Mm. We want to get better and smarter about what we're doing. We want to learn, we want to innovate. So to me, a standardized STEM or STEAM kind of a curriculum that included something around AI and data literacy would be a perfect vehicle for that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think there are definitely opportunities to do that. On the other side then of the Bill of Rights, where would you like the Bill of Rights to go? Where is that? You know, you say it's in its first draft, basically. We've probably got a long way to go, but ultimately, where would you like to see that be developed towards?
So, one area, for example, outside of the overall awareness and such, and a program to address that through, like you talked about, this STEAM kind of standardized program, I think in one area is how do we define the variables and metrics around which we want the models to operate?
Okay.
So the government could take a very strong leadership role in defining these are the variables and metrics we need to consider. Like, for example, there are things you can't do in a model. You're not supposed to do. Like in the U.S., we have the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which says you can't make credit decisions based on people's age, based on their gender, based on their race, based on their sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. Right? There are categories of protected classes. Mm-hmm. Right? We need to make sure those protected classes are enforced in these models. And what's tricky here, it isn't just like five variables; it's the combination of proxy variables around that you could use to help figure out. Oh, that's this kind of a person by the kind of music they listen to, by where they live, right? And so having protected classes is important because what we're trying to do is give everybody an equal opportunity, right? Not an equal outcome, right? Mm-hmm. I don't believe in equal outcomes, but I do believe we want to give everybody an equal opportunity. We want to level the playing field. We want to define in basketball where that three-point line is so everybody knows where that three-point line is, right? It's not here for certain classes of people and here for other classes. And so the government could go a long ways in not only articulating that these are the protected classes that your AI models cannot use, but these are the proxy variables that you also cannot use.
Right.
Okay. And start laying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's more we could do on the variables and metrics, because that's one of the key things I think that worries me about AI models, because if we don't build enough variety of variables and metrics in our AI models, we're going to end up with all kinds of unintended consequences and confirmation bias, the two real big gotchas in an AI model.
Which is happening right now anyway,
Oh,
which is endemic in most of the models that we see
yeah,
or use or.
there's a great book by Cathy O'Neill called Weapons of Math Destruction. God, I love that title. I was like, I wish I'd have thought of that name, right? It's a marvelous read. She's got a nice TED talk on YouTube. I had my students review it, because she goes through and says, this is already happening today. We already have these biases in our models today, right? So it isn't like surprise, this is not new news. And so I think the government and the next step in that Bill of Rights, whether it's in the US or in Europe or Asia or wherever it might be, the next level is say, these are the variables and metrics around which you need to think about, and these are the variables and metrics you can never use, that you are not allowed to use. And if you use those, we can put all kinds of penalties in place and, take your firstborn child, take all your stock options away from you, et cetera.
And then what about the powerful organizations that are the top five most powerful information organizations that wield, incredible table stakes?
We don't want to bring them down, but we do want to have them play by the same rules. All right, it's kind of like my frustration. I don't know how
Hasn't the
much you know
horse
about
bolted
NVIDIA.
already?
Sure, it's out. We corral it. We bring it back in, right? We define that we can define the rules, right? But we have to define them and then enforce them. So in the NBA basketball, I don't know much about NBA basketball, but there's this rule called traveling, right? You can't take the ball and you can't take
And you
two
can't.
steps before you.
Correct. I know what
Yeah, you
traveling
can't
means.
do that. Right. So everybody has that rule, except for LeBron James, who has this move he calls the crab walk. Now, walking is technically a traveling. He has a move called the crab walk, right? Which by this very name is indicative of traveling. And he gets away with that move all the time. And to me, it's like, wait a second. That's not fair, right? You should have the same set of rules
For
and
everyone.
enforce them equally across the organization. So defining the rules is the very first step, that makes sure we've got this level playing field. So no matter if you're a big organization or you're a small organization down on the corner somewhere here in Iowa, you have a level playing field, right? Doesn't guarantee equal outcomes, but you get equal opportunity. But then we need to enforce. And that's, if we don't enforce, then the players are going to put, I mean, it's like your 7-year-old kid. They're always going to push the edge. And so it's define and enforce. Put some teeth behind the enforcement and try to level the playing field, so everybody has an equal opportunity.
So in the UK, we have the Information Commissioner's Office, the people that enforce regulations right now. We have a number of different, obviously regulators like the FCA that will look after the financial markets. Do we need to have an AI regulator that sits across each of these
Yes.
different?
Yes. Yes. Yes, yes, and yes. If we think that AI has the potential to do so much good as to a society and the quality of life and quality of living and healthcare and employment, if we believe that AI has this great potential for good, and we know it also has great potential for danger, then we
Correct.
should have a commission that sits across all these organizations, designed to define and enforce a level playing field.
And do we think that that comes from an external authority to regulate that? I mean, I don't know what AI will look like in the future. I have no
No, that's
clue.
scary, isn't
It,
it?
it's,
Yeah,
I,
we don't know.
you know,
So we better do something now to make sure we
Right.
have rules and regulations in play, so that as this commission, whatever you're going to put together to do this, has to be as agile as the technology around it, which is not, by the way, a characteristic of government agencies.
So I was going to come to that, right? And here's the other aspect that I often get fixated on when we talk about regulators and we talk about governments and we talk about the lobbying that happens. which is a very powerful industry, right? Huge, yep. Hugely powerful. How do we get transparency around that? How do we move from, you know, knowing what we know now in terms of lobbying and, you know, policies and so on, to an area where AI is ultimately supposed to be so transparent and everyone, as you said, is on a level playing field. Are we saying that AI is now going to be the area where we finally get away from that? We become less corrupted and more open?
Well, we know that, you know, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Yeah. And that's just a given, that there will be corruption in any organization, whether it's a government agency or whether it's a private agency. So what do you do? I mean, you talk about the word transparency is critical, right? Which is what we don't have in today. Yes. I mean, we're going through this today with some of our Supreme Court justices in the U.S. here who have financial packages in place that we should have been disclosed about law, but we don't seek transparency, right? So this is an area where the people sitting in this commission, not only do we have to have term limits, but you're going to have full transparency into all their interactions. Here's a thought for you, Samir, something that I've been wrestling with.
Mm-hmm.
And that is John Smale, who was the CEO of Procter & Gamble back in the 1980s when I was working with them, used to always say, you are what you measure, and you measure what you reward, which was his way of saying that you will do likely what we pay you to do.
Mm-hmm.
That if we say we're a company around environmental issues and diversity, and all of our executives get paid on quarterly stock prices or mm-hmm. quarterly earnings, then your statement about we're about environmental and community is bullshit.
Right? Yes.
It just is, right? Because if you're not paid on those variables and metrics, then you're never going to seek to optimize. And they're always going to become, take care of profitability first, take care of this second. So what if we change the way in which people on this commission got paid?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we had transparency into, you know, their wealth generation activities outside of that community, not just on that community, but also, you know, once they leave, are they making side agreements to do things? And then 2 years later, they become, you know, the senior executive of one of these organizations.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So I think it's a really, really hard problem. It's a hard problem that we've not solved from a government perspective. And when people rail against the government, they always talk about the corruption inside the government. And it's really true. There's tons of it. There's tons of fraud and corruption. But there's also fraud and corruption in private agencies and private entities.
Of course.
So I think the key is what you said is this transparency, understanding what these people are, where they're getting their money, both in the past, today, and in the future, term limits, but we also got to measure them differently. I mean, mm-hmm. I would love to see a CEO came up and said, here's how I'm going to pay my management team. We're going to get paid 25% based on earnings. We're going to get paid 25% based on our environmental impact. We're going to get paid 25% based on our community impact and 25% on our whatever ethical behaviors, whatever it is, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That you have. So we ask our AI models to do that. Right.
Yes.
We build our AI models. We have all these different variables and metrics.
Yeah.
Costs, but you know,
less
of
humans.
We ask less of humans, right?
Yeah.
If we expect AI models, we expect them to do this, and we put these demands around them. By golly, why can't we put the same demands around our leaders?
Absolutely. And coming back to the human factor here, which is not going to erode, and I think we're, you know, if I think about the where we're heading with AI and, you know, even things like AGI, you know, which if we ever get to it, but I'm also thinking the human machine factor where people are trying to augment their brains, you know, with technology. How do you then, you know, how do we govern that? Because that equally is another dimension of AI plus technology plus the human factor. And then people will have an extreme advantage over others who don't have that, you know, because they may not want it. And therefore, you know, how do you then look at that as a society, which is really kind of strange for me.
So I by the way, Samir, this is why I love talking to you. This conversation is like nothing I've had with anybody else. So this is absolutely wonderful. But let's go back to your question.
Yes.
About you know, some people who have the means to have access to better tools.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what it is, right?
The augmentation factor. Yeah.
Well, I think step one of what we're, and I talk about this in the book quite a bit, a whole chapter dedicated to making informed decisions. And I think step one of the process is teaching people how to overcome a lot of the natural biases that we have as humans to make more informed decisions. I think it's like 10% of Americans believe the earth is flat.
Right. Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Where's the edge?
Hey, where's you just walked off it.
Yeah, right. And we have like 13% of Americans don't wear seatbelts, even though the numbers show that the survival rate wearing a seatbelt is like 2x what it is for not wearing a seatbelt. Yes. Right. And so, and I know that, you know, people are probably making conscious choices. Well, I'm not going to have the government tell me what to do. Okay. Sure. Just so you know that if you get in a car accident and you know, the impact is if you get in a car accident and you get hurt and need long-term care, I'm going to end up paying for that through my taxes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. It doesn't just impact you. It impacts society.
Yes.
And so the thing that we need to help and educate, again, starting in our grade schools, is how do you leverage data and analytics to overcome these natural biases to make more informed decisions about what food you're eating, what movies you're going to, what you're believing when you read something on social media? How do we teach people how to leverage data and analytics, basic statistics, kind of as a good starting point, you know, averages and standard deviations, so you can kind of use, but we can help people leverage data and analytics. So I may not have the ability to get some sort of a device put on side of my head that's going to do processing for me. I don't have the means for that, but I have the training and skills to know that I know what I'm trying to achieve. I can do that without having something augmenting my thinking process. That I think it just starts by making sure that we teach people how to make informed decisions and how to overcome a lot of the biases that infiltrate their life today and cause them to make all kinds of crazy statements and decisions.
Isn't that though about, you know, I'm thinking about that informed decision piece and I'm thinking about what you've just said. Isn't that the ethical basis of society, basically? What you have referred to?
Yeah. You know, well, I've written a blog, at least one, where I talk about
You've written many.
Yeah. I've written many.
Yeah. At least
way
one.
Too many. Yeah. I wrote a blog. I said, I believe God is an economist.
Okay. Okay.
Right. If you think about the lessons in the Bible and the lessons as taught by, you know, by Jesus, is he's thinking more holistically.
Okay.
About economic value as defined from an economic perspective,
mm-hmm.
on how it affects other people, how it affects community, how it affects your environment, right? I think there's a lot of economics in the Bible, which I know sounds really, really weird. And my biblical friends probably think
we're
wacko.
Having a good conversation about this. You
but,
know?
But you think about that, and I do think it gets back to the very heart of how we as a society are roots. Around value definition. I think the golden rule, for example, treat thy neighbor as you'd like them how to treat you, is a fundamental way of life, which most people really don't understand or listen to or obey, but it's also the basic premise, I guess you could say, on how you develop an AI model.
Yeah.
I want an AI model that treats everybody like I would want to be treated.
I get that. And I do get that. But the people who are creating the models, I mean, essentially, who are we? We are a derivation of a caveman. We had tribal influences. We have that judgmental, you know, we like to go to war. We like to have conflict, you know.
But we evolved. We have evolved, though. We have evolved.
We have.
We can learn to evolve.
I get that.
Right.
Yeah. So go on. No.
No, so, I mean, but I think it's a really important point. We have learned to evolve, right? In the U.S., everybody used to smoke cigarettes. Now the number of people who smoke cigarettes in the U.S. is it's a fraction of what it used to be because we educated. We made people aware, right? Yeah. Awareness and education is a great starting foundation. I think same thing with AI and ethical outcomes. It starts with awareness. It starts with education. And they make sure everybody's aware so that they can, they have, everybody has the right to demand. If an AI model is making a decision, I have a right to know what variables and metrics it used to make that decision about me.
Yeah.
Right. If it denied me a job or denied me a loan or denied me entry into a museum or something, I want to know the rationale. I want to know the variables and metrics. We need to be empowered to ask those questions, to become like Tom Hanks in the movie Big and raise my hand and say, I don't get it. And I do think it's back down to a lot of the religious foundation aspects. Again, I think the religious aspects are also the economic aspects.
Yeah.
That we need to think more holistically as a society and as individuals. How do we define value?
Yeah. Yeah. That is, that's a great way to look at it. And I actually have never sort of considered the religious view in terms of the way you've put it. And I think I'm going to explore that more. Where do you think we are? Transparency, ethics, you know, all of the things that we've talked about, the Bill of Rights. Where do you think we're heading as this technology gets accelerated? I mean, look, GPT came out just a year ago, yeah? And we've had so much of an overload, but the ability to go from the first iteration of GPT to where we are now, I think it's what, 3.5 or 4?
Yeah, we're at 4 now, yeah.
Yeah, 4. That's it, the leaps that have been made have been quite significant. So in another year, where are we going to be? What are we going to be able to do that's significantly quicker, better, and optimize ourselves, basically, you know?
I would love to pull together a diverse group of people and go through an exercise to ideate the potential unintended consequences of AI, all of different ways it could go wrong, and think about the different scenarios we have there. Because I don't think there's one, I think there's a multiple scenarios of how this plays out. I think we're at an inflection point now.
We are.
And we're going to be at other inflection points, right? We know the technology is advancing much faster than I think we ever thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ChatGPT scared a lot of people.
Yes.
And that was great. Yeah. It raised awareness, which was step one in the process. So this thing is here today. You can't deny it. I think we need to think through as a broad society. What are all the different paths that could go on here? We're not going to get them all because we don't know. But we could probably think through, you know, if we don't train people, we see the divide. If we don't define transparency, we see corruption. If we don't define the right variables and metrics, we see unethical outcomes, right? So I don't know, Samir, how this plays out. I don't think anybody knows because the game's not been played yet. And there are all these different paths that could come out. And the path we take will depend on society bringing together different perspectives and different views to figure out what path we end up taking. If we become, if we become exclusive, we'll have to divide, right? So I think part of what our charter is to continue to be out there trying to make sure that everybody has a voice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was why I wrote the book, right?
Yeah.
I wrote that book because I really wanted everybody to feel, not only be aware, but feel comfortable and confident to have that conversation, that you don't need to be a data scientist, but you do need to become an empowered citizen of data science.
Fantastic. Bill, I love that. And I've had an exhilarating conversation with you. I know that we could go on forever because there's so much to speak about. And maybe another time, but, you know, I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's been fantastic. As always, Bill, your point of view is magnificent. And just keep going. I love it.
Samir, I knew this conversation would go off on these great... It isn't that it goes off on tangents. We went off on... We looked over the horizon.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's interesting.
Which I think we need to.
We get so infatuated where we are today in our own horizon. Sometimes we need to pause and say, well, what could happen over the edge of that horizon?
Yeah.
And start to contemplate, what is the desired outcome that we want for AI? And what do we need to be doing today to make sure we're driving towards that outcome?
Correct. Yeah, because it could go in very, very different ways. And those paths you talk about could be quite scary. But hopefully let's be leveled, grounded, and confident and comfortable, which I love about what you said. Great.
Yes.
Thank you, Bill. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Amir.
Thanks.